Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Comics Fondle podcast. My name is Andrew, and my site is comics review site at comicsfondle.com.
And this is Vernon Wiley, proprietor of the fine establishment Comics Gallery of Wilmette, Illinois, great purveyor of comics in America.
And this is our monthly-ish podcast where we talk about comic book related things, and actually we have more to talk about because next week on Friday and Saturday, so that is, I don't have a calendar up, but
25 and 26.
The 25th and 26th, there are going to be some special episodes of the Comics Fondle podcast coming up, some little micro episodes as we walk around the convention floor at C2E2 in Chicago, so we will be there walking around, talking to people.
Making friends, asking for spare change.
Pretty much. And we'll be identifiable. That's another thing.
You will be able to see us. Yes. And we hope that, you know, we hope to see you at the C2E2. You know, it's always a good, fun geek fest in the cosplay and the programming and meeting the stars. It's a blast. And Andrew and I'll be on the sales floor, as it were. And if, by God, if you see us somewhere, don't hesitate to say hello. Okay.
Especially since then you might get a prize. So you might,
depending on how well you drool or something equally nice. But we got the good stuff anyway. And this week, you know, we just said, hey, we're going to do a mini podcast. We're going to try to cut it up, but we got some stuff to talk about anyway. And was there anything about C2E2 we wanted to cover real quick, or just make sure you see us and bother us to death?
Yep, see us, bother us. We're going to be there. We're going to have an identifier. What else is going on? The identifier is a button, a big old button. So
yes.
If you don't know us, you'll see it, and it'll say Comics Fondle, and it's up at the Facebook page, actually, over at facebook.com/thecomicsgallery, comics with an X, and I think I'll be putting that up on the blog, too, just so if you see it and know us, you know, and recognize it, you can come on up. And there are prizes, like we said. And I think that's about it. We're going to be there Friday and Saturday, and we'll see what happens.
Yep, that's it. That's it indeed. I mean, we're going to be floating around there, saying hello to lots of people, doing stuff, and we hope to see you there. Comics, man. April with five Wednesdays was killing me here because everybody took a couple of weeks off, so there weren't like a ton of releases from the last time you and I were yakking, but I did, at least we want to do things thematically. You know, Andrew has a habit, he reads digital comics, so he gets ahead of me. Me being buried in the trenches with physical matter, I'm a little behind, so I wanted to comment on a few of Marvel's new wave first issue releases anyway, to set the continuity straight, and I don't know, we'll just go back and forth on them. Andrew and I had some interesting opinions about them, but what'd you think of the first dupe, my friend?
You know, I never read Ecstatic.
You never did?
I never got around. The million and six comic book series I need to go back and read. Ecstatic is on that list. I thought it was all right. I thought that there were some issues where it sort of excluded new readers a little bit.
It really did. I was hoping, you know, because Dupe is like that accessible pickle character mutant that you might think you might jump on somewhere with, you know, because it looks lighthearted. But, you know, the whole thing with the Kitty Pryde subplot and all that, and I was like, unless you're one of the converted reading X-Men, this is pretty
right.
Stiff.
So, I mean, that was an issue. I'm reading it, and some of it was funny, but I'm just kind of like, this is clearly not a comic for me. I mean, it's clearly a comic for not just people who liked Ecstatic, but people who also are X-Men fans.
Real X-Men fans. I mean, like real X-Men fans. Okay, and I'll let that one go. Did you get to read the Iron Fist yet?
I didn't even know there was a new Iron Fist. What?
Okay. Well, you've been warned. It's out there. It's by, was this Care Andrews? Remember the cover guy at the beginning?
Yeah.
Well, he's got the book to himself. He's writing and drawing it right now. And I don't know. Andrew hates it, you know, when he finds out about stuff late like this. I'll go out on a limb and say that if you know the saga of Danny Rand, you could probably safely pass this book up because it's kind of a recreation of it with a little expressionist spin on the artwork, as it were. But it doesn't add a whole lot to the mix. So I found it okay. Hey, now, what about the new She-Hulk? Have you read that one yet?
There's a third She-Hulk?
There is a third She-Hulk, and my apologies to our podcast. I know. Well, anyway, put that on your list. That's pretty good. That one, the She-Hulk, I hate to say it, but it seems to be the creme de la creme of Marvel.
Now, wait. No, what? Maybe I did read it. Was it the one with the cliffhanger and Doctor Doom?
That's correct.
Okay, yeah. So I already read that. This was a couple weeks ago. Okay. I'm like, there's another one already. Okay, yeah. I read that one.
Yeah. I mean, that seems to be the solid book out of the new lineup. And
it does really seem to be the best book out of the lineup. And it's
so funny. You know what some of my customers argue about? They go, the She-Hulk is not drawn prettily enough for them. And I'll go out, and you guys can kick my ass later when you see me in the shop after you listen. But I'm like, well, who cares? I mean, she's 7 foot tall and green. What more do you want? I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, what else? So you loved Ghost Rider. I mean.
Oh, yeah, I loved Ghost Rider.
You loved Ghost Rider.
Oh, I loved it so much that I use it for wall insulation. Trad Moore's art is just really, I don't know what's going on. Do you think there's enough of a script here for him to hang off of that he could illustrate these properly? Because it seems like Luther Strode was a much better illustrated book.
At least
where I could keep up with a narrative. I don't know. Here I'm lost because there's just so much disjunction.
That's true. And I mean, I still think it's funny that it's sort of Blue Beetleizing of Ghost Rider. Guy's even got practically the same name as the new Blue Beetle. I think it's just funny.
I think it would have been better if it used a Hispanic chick or something. Didn't they have a female Ghost Rider come in on Venom? Yeah. It wasn't even 2 years ago already, I don't think. Maybe it was 2 years ago. But they had a female Ghost Rider. And I was thinking, okay, but it's got to be a Spanish male. So I'm thinking, is this like running according to like statistics that marketing people want to use, or is this actually kind of an interesting interpretation? I think I'd much rather have a Spanish female at this point.
Yeah. I'm still trying
to figure out what kicking around his retarded brother. It seems like he exists only to be beat on and chastised. It's kind of tough. All right. Let's see. Ghost Rider we got. What's on the list? Did you read Silver Surfer?
No, you didn't tell me to. You sort of warned me off of it. Don't you remember?
I did. You know, one issue's out. We're waiting for another one. One of these days, we're going to read another Mike Allred book that I want to read, but this just isn't it yet. It's kind of pretty, but I'm not there. He always has to have like the female character hanging along, you know. And I'm like, ugh. So I'm gonna be nice and let that one off of the pass. But last but not least, did you read the second Moon Knight?
No. After the first one? No, I'm not going to read the second one.
Ooh, you elitist slime.
You liked the first one more than I did. No.
I thought it was good Batman. Like, good Moon Knight is generally good Batman, right? Okay, so I give it good Batman marks. It's not a great book. And Declan Shelby's artwork carries it. I think we mentioned that about our artists that were carrying the book. And Declan Shelby's art definitely carried the book in that case. And it kind of, you know, the second issue has kind of a formula playing with the conventions of how panels work and how they interject with the telling of the story. And it wasn't bad, but it just, again, it wasn't something that particularly engaged me. There's a certain distance to projects, I think, that Warren Ellis has when he's writing for someone else. It doesn't seem very emotional, or he's not really grabbing me here. So I give it another good Batman rating, you know, and that's kind of where that second wave of Marvel books is for me. I'm trying to think if there's any other. I won't read Black Widow. I can't go there.
Who's doing that one?
I don't know who's writing it, but it's got Phil Noto on artwork, and I can't deal with Phil Noto. It's too stiff. Figures should be pretty and curvy, you know. They're not. They look too much like fashion illustration. And let me see. So anyway, there's some good books that came out. We finished up Juice Squeezers. That finished up pretty good.
If a little bit too forward thinking, let's say.
Yeah, it definitely has a franchise ending onto it, unfortunately. I mean, it'd have been better if he tied it up and then just had another separate book. But it seems like we're going to have to continue the story, which is a little bit of a disappointment. But at 4 issues, I'll let him slide for a while. Hopefully this will catch on to our fans. What was it? Did you get to read that weird book, The Field, from Image yet?
No, you told me about that one and I totally forgot it. And it's Ed Brisson too. And I had told you to read it and then I forgot to read it. Ugh.
Getter Access. Well, you got to read it and get it up on your blog.
I'm not doing too well, apparently. Okay.
You're doing really good. If we had to put, you know, kids, if you go to his blog right now at comicsfondle.com, you'll find books that aren't even out on the internet. So enjoy. Or out on the racks, I should say. Let's see. Brisson, I think they do a well enough job. It's set up. I'll read issue 2, but I got to have something meatier that I haven't quite gone through yet, maybe. But it's active and surreal. Minimum Wage, it came out with a 4th issue, which I haven't had time with. Got a beautiful cover of, what's the name of the protagonist in that?
Rob.
Rob and his buddies taking a piss in the alley against the wall. Pretty funny stuff. But I've been enjoying that quite a bit. A real strange book came out. Brian Hitch did a new superhero book surprise called Real Heroes, which was okay. I mean, kind of like a Brian Hitch superhero book. I mean, I don't know if it's really distinguishable too much from the last one he did. What was that called? All American Heroes or something? Or
yeah, Real Heroes. What did I say? It's like Galaxy Quest only serious. I mean, it's fine enough stuff because he's having fun with, I guess, the Avengers mostly. Movie. So I mean, that one's all right. What else? Let me see here.
You've been reading that Rover Red Charlie, haven't you?
I've been reading Rover Red Charlie. I haven't read the latest one yet, but I've been reading that.
That's solid stuff. It's really
solid
strange
stuff. That yeah, it's a shame that.
Yeah, it's $4 a hit. I mean, that's his biggest drawback. I think the fact that you got to go buy an Avatar book for $4, and it's kind of about three dogs in the apocalypse. So, you know, it's got real simple dialogue, but it still works, and it probably will read better as a collected edition. But it's not a bad book. I mean, if you sit there and told me, like, oh, here's a story about three dogs in the apocalypse, I might laugh my head off. But Ennis is making it work so far.
Yeah, and it's better than most of the other stuff he's been doing lately, which is...
Yeah, that Caliban was a real piece of poo.
What else? You know, I just read, what was it, the one, Translucid...
Oh, you got to read that one. That looked real pretty, but I didn't get to read it.
It's gorgeous. I mean, the writing is crap, but it is this gorgeous book. And I wanted to bring it up because not only is the art gorgeous, this is a guy who his name is Daniel Bayliss, I believe. And he got his only other work, and you can get this online. I haven't read it yet. Is a Batman fan story that got him the job at Boom. They like called him up and offered him the job based on this.
No shit.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys, get that fanfic out there over to Boom right away.
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of cool because we saw that last year with, what was his name? Not Max Brooks, right? Who did the Disney one?
Fuck.
Remember that one? The... Donald, Mickey, and Goofy all get hammered and talk about their lives.
Oh, who was behind that? Who was behind that? I don't know. That was gorgeous stuff, though. That was the best fanfic I've seen in a while in comic book form. And if you can find a scan of that, throw it on your hard drive right away.
What else? Flash Gordon by Jeff Parker is kind of interesting. Oh, I hated that Shudder book.
Oh really? Yeah, you know it was fun to read, and that's how I told people. But it needed more content, and it needed a little bit more for the protagonist. She was kind of like not quite there yet. Now, you like first issues to bowl you over, which it didn't do.
Yeah, I think the one we really gotta promote, at least. I don't know if you've read it yet, though.
I've been
Auteur. Have you read Auteur yet?
I read the first one. I haven't read the new one yet, though. I'm very sorry. Was it as good as one?
It's better than one. It's amazing. It's the best thing ever. What were you thinking?
I'm going to run home and ignore my wife and read it right away, I swear to God.
That was a good book.
You know, Rick Spears, where has he been? I mean, he did a couple of little odds and ends many, many years ago when I first opened up my shop. But I can't think of much he's written for many years now. It's like he got a real job and then decided he had something in him. So now we get the auteur all of a sudden from Oney Press of all places.
Yeah, they get the real job thing, you know.
I know that you read the digitals. Do they have the two-sided poster that comes in there too?
Oh, of the auteur? Good grief, yeah. No. Auteur is nice enough that I'm able to get reviewers' copies, but no, there's no accessories, unfortunately.
Yeah, send that number 3 over to me, will you, please? Let me see. It's got these centerfold posters in the first 4 issues of his, like, movies, and they're just gorgeous little goofy-ass B-movie posters. Yeah. And then on the other side, they're double-printed, so you get a full blown-up cover of the issue that's that. It's just gorgeous. It's a beautiful package for $3.99, and it makes Marvel's $3.99 comics look like dog shit. I'm not kidding you. Well, let's see. I got one more on my list that hung around for a little while. Mr. Matt Fraction's Sex Criminals. I read 5 and decided I was going to go a little further, believe it or not.
Yeah, I gave up on that a long time ago.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. You know, he's got the hook, okay, but I'm not really happy with the characters or how kind of weird they are, and I'm not quite sure about the possibilities. But for some reason, I think I keep saying, okay, I'm going to give it one more issue. And then that happened, and I says, okay, I'm going to give it one more issue. So we're going to find out for me whether I'm just a big hopeless wuss boy or I can actually explain why I'm continuing to read this book. But I don't know. I'm just kind of like morbidly curious as if this is going to go anywhere, you know? Speaking of morbidly curious, the second issue of What Starlight had the same thing, even though it was kind of a running in place issue. I'm still waiting for like Mark Millar to have a person with a ball bat come up and hit him in the head and break his skull and bleed all over the place or something, you know?
Yeah. What was the one that I kept giving a chance to? That Vertigo book about the witch. Remember that? I just would not give up on that book.
Oh, man, Vertigo Witch. Oh, man, those are such general nouns. Vertigo Witch book. Which one was this?
Coffin Hill. That's what
Oof.
It was.
Oof. Yeah.
I gave that so many chances based on a nice first issue. I just was.
Yeah. I think it just fell, I think, in April. I looked at April sales, and I think it fell under 10,000 copies per issue, which for Vertigo is acceptable, but that's not the kind of numbers DC's going to want to need for long-term plans, I don't think. You know, and here, I'm going to mention this real quick. I have never seen the companies, especially DC, publish books that fell below 15,000 copies per issue at this rate before, and it's really strange because normally it's like, okay, cut them off, try something new. But I don't know if they've got anything new to replace these things with, to be honest with you. It's all a cycle. I get it. But when you're a company, which is as big as DC, and you're publishing books that are going between 9 and 15,000 copies per issue, that's kind of like an indie level land. You know what I mean? You don't have the budget to do that. So, like, how long are they going to be able to do that? And well, are now, they so – go ahead. I'm sorry.
We were talking – I don't know if this was on a podcast, but I asked if Marvel or DC was going to be at C2E2, and you were, like, laughing at me. No, Marvel's there. DC's not.
No, they're kind of in the middle. They don't want to do the they'll do the coast things, but they don't want to touch the Midwest anymore, I guess. Bastards. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, well, I read Sinestro, which you pointed out had Cullen Bunn, and I mean, I hated that. It reminded me of Red Lanterns. Remember that?
Oh, the Peter Milligan book, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it just reminded me of the worst of the... And I just was like, oh, why am I reading DC Comics these days? And I thought I'd learned my lesson, and it's...
Well, you know, here's the thing. You look at a book, it's got a good pedigree. Cullen Bunn, the writer, is obviously doing work for hire, based on your reaction to it. And here's a guy that we love reading The Sixth Gun. Andrew and I have been reading The Sixth Gun for, like, what, 5 years or something. I don't know.
Whatever. Yep, started with The Damned. Him and Brian Hurt. Yeah, hopefully Brian Hurt will be at C2E2 too.
That's a book like, okay, well, it's a replacement book, but replacement for what? And is there a market for Sinestro as a book? I don't know, really. Maybe like a 4 to 6 issue miniseries, maybe. You know, and I'm like, well, how long do you think you can carry on with Sinestro? I mean, he's not exactly like A-list material for books. I don't know. It's a weird decision. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. Have you got any other books that you wanted to mention this week?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll finish up by talking about the 500-pound gorilla in the room. And since I'm a retailer and not very detached from the subject, I'll ask you, what about Amazon's purchase of Comixology? Do you think that has anything going on, or what's going on?
You know, I don't know what's going on. It's interesting that it's good that it's Amazon, because Amazon is actually, even though they make the Kindle Fire and had a bunch of exclusive book deals with that, as I recall, with DC that pissed people off, they don't really care where you read your thing. So it's not like your Comixology app for your iPad is going to stop working, or it's going to stop working if you do it through your Android, your Samsung tablet, for example. But I mean, are they gonna fold the purchasing into an Amazon transaction somehow? Amazon does allow subscriptions to things now. So, I mean, are you going to be able to subscribe, or can you already subscribe through Comixology? Is it going to piss off the big companies that have contracts with Comixology?
That's where I had issues.
Disney want to be in bed that deep with
Amazon
exclusively?
Right.
Let's not forget that Disney's biggest shareholder is Steve Jobs' wife. You know, who knows how much she has to do with business at that point.
Really, there's a million ways this could go, and it's utterly fascinating. When you look at all the different, like, elements that make up this deal and all the things that are involved here, excuse me. As a retailer, my big thing is, what about the contracts that the big two have with Comixology to present their material, and how does that change when the contracts expire and they can negotiate new terms? Because Amazon is not known for full retail on anything, and will Marvel and DC buckle under pressure from them, especially if they're doing shittier in sales and desperate for some other platform to make
money?
Will they give them more of a cut to offer their stuff cheaper than what I can offer? You know what I'm saying?
That would be
catastrophic.
Well, it'd be catastrophic, and it would. I can see, actually, as we're talking about, I can see DC doing it out of desperation at some point. But can you even imagine how? Well, Comixology has, what is it, they have 99-cent sales on back issues, and sometimes the back issues are relatively recent.
Okay. I have a few of those, too. I can't argue.
Right. So, I mean, but is Amazon going to take it down to a quarter? And at that point, is that worth any money to anybody? Because, you know, there's already a 30% cut going to Apple. There's already however much going to the publishers.
Right. And when you're talking about $3, $4, $5 sales, you know, you got to do a lot of volume to make up for that small retail price. You know what I mean? To make it worth Amazon, where I give a shit.
And the other thing would be that this is the only game in town right now. Is Amazon taking it over going to promote there being more alternatives? I guess you can buy comics through the Apple iBooks store. I don't know how recent they are. I just know that there was some notoriety.
Also, profit structure is different between those two methods of obtaining books as well for the authors.
Yes, I think. Well, I know that Saga was offered through the iBooks store, and when Comixology censored that issue, as opposed to, like, confronting Apple about it. I know that it was not censored in the iBook store. But off the top of my head, I have no idea how many, you know.
Right, and that's it, because we really don't know if they make any real money off of digital comics. At this point, my guess is as long as it continued to grow. However, from what I understand, it's starting to level off, and it's a little too soon for digital to level off to pretend it's going to be a real huge moneymaker. I mean, I could be wrong, but I mean, that's my impressions from what I get so far. Again, I really don't want to see them cut prices on things, because then, it gets to a point where it's, is it worth my time? You know.
Well, now looking at the app right now on the iPhone. Now, get ready for this one. I am currently looking at Batman number 482 by Doug Monk and Jim Aparo.
Good luck.
Hold on, with terrible metadata, not telling you when it actually was published. But guess how much that comic book is?
Oh, God, I'm afraid to ask. If you pulled it up that fast, I would imagine free or almost free.
$2.
Wow, that's overpriced.
Overpriced? I'm curious what it originally was priced at.
What year is it from?
Batman 487. I don't know. Jim Aparo art.
You got the cover?
92.
Okay, then probably what, 75 to $1.25.
$1.25. So you are paying more for a digital comic than you did for like a dollar than you did for a paper copy.
Right. And I would, on average, price that book at $2 in a back issue bin, provided it were not in pristine shape. I will charge $2 for an old comic because it's worn, and that's what you need to get somebody to read it. If it's in pristine shape, then it becomes a collectible, more or less, and it goes for like probably double digits or whatever it is. But those are rare. So we're not talking about a huge price difference in structure here, are we?
Well, now DC is selling through the iBook store, so they don't need Comixology or Amazon anymore. Marvel's right. Not yet. Marvel, I think, has an exclusive with Comixology for now.
Don't they sell their shit on their own site too?
I thought it went through Comixology. I mean, the weird part of it is that Comixology has done so much work building up their brand that to turn around and raise
try to go against it.
Mm-hmm. Because right now, Amazon's not exactly known for owning a lot of companies that have individual identities. Now, Sinestro is, for example, up on there too at $2.99.
Yeah, that's fine. You see, the publishers don't want to hurt their main source of income, which is us. I would imagine that we, at the very least, we're 3/4 of their publishing income, at the very least. Because I don't see digital taking any more than 20%, but I might be willing to guess 25. I doubt it, though, you know. Because the publishers still take care of us. Once they stop giving a shit, then I'll know.
So that's an interesting one.
Yeah, no shit. That's, like I say, that's the 800-pound gorilla in the room right now for the survival, because a lot of shops will not survive if Marvel or DC starts doing that. And I begin to wonder, because once you get rid of a lot of shops or a few shops, then there's a lot of, then DC and Marvel and all them aren't selling as much product. And then that kind of pushes them along that route. You know what I mean? It continues to gain momentum of them being less of a physical publisher.
Mm-hmm. And being less of a physical presence is an interesting thing with DC more right now, because Marvel is sort of omnipresent, whereas DC is...
They're definitely the second hat.
And they are... What, there was an interview, I guess, in Forbes, where the guy who's making the Batman Superman movie was talking a lot. And he seems to indicate he can't even convince them to show off the new costumes.
Oh, okay.
He's like, they're just so concerned with marketing and things like that, that they're not willing to do, if they're not willing to even show people the costumes. And it's just, he's like, I've got a poster on my wall. I could take a picture of it, but I'm not allowed to. And it's just into this whole, and see, I feel like DC used to make some of these decisions because it was not by DC. I guess I mean Warner Brothers, because they had like this huge infrastructure that they were the rock solid comic book company. Do you really want to go up against Disney on the other hand? Marvel could have, you know, the worst year in the history of the company, and it would still probably not make Disney blink. I mean...
Right. Well, yeah, and you look at the success of Marvel films, too. I mean, it's not just the matter of doing films that are better than DC films, but also doing them at, what, three times the rate that DC does. I mean, they're just exponentially growing just watching it happen, you know?
And DC's been playing catch up with them, has been unable to play catch up with them. I mean, you could look at it and say that DC took out or took off the, what was it, 4 or 5 years that they were making the Christian Bale Batman movies, and sort of convinced themselves that there was not going to be any success for Marvel. They even said that at the Comic-Con, I think for Batman 2, and then, you know, Iron Man sort of came out and did really well, and it's just grown and grown.
Right, even the lesser films make money for them. I mean, DC would love to have, like, the lesser films make money for them. I mean, they make pretty good money on the successes, but they don't have, like, a huge... It's a franchise, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, it's a much more successful franchise.
And it's interesting because, you know, the movie gorilla in the room, of course, is Green Lantern, was the one that was supposed to start it all. And yeah, that sort of didn't happen.
Well, look at they're betting on the Flash, too.
What is they're betting on the Flash for TV, though.
Well, who knows? I mean, I think at this point, DC would take any success with a huge trumpet and a ballyhoo.
That's true. So, yeah, it's just weird that they're not going to be there. There's not going to, I don't know. Convention season has started, so.
Yeah, and they lead me more and more to believe that they're not really interesting as publishing at this point. And it's kind of tough because you don't want to, you know, because you don't want to lose that. I mean, you can own these characters, but if you don't do the comic books.
Especially when you look at the difference between the new series from Marvel and the new series from DC. The whole all-new Marvel thing has been, a lot of it, really quirky stuff.
Yeah.
DC launching Sinestro in his own, you know, solo book, it's exactly what we've seen from DC every other time.
Yes, it's possibly the most conservative decision-making you could have imagined, right, exactly. For new books that you're trying to make inroads in, get new readers, it's not working. You keep catering to the same inbred audience, which is looking for more but not getting it from these storylines that are just recycled hash.
I'm wondering, and I suppose if I spent 4 to 7 minutes looking for it on the internet, I could find it. I'm wondering if anybody wrote like a article comparing DC's New 52 to what they did after Crisis in the 80s. And I would guess, just, you know, off the top of my head, one of the biggest differences would be is that in the late 80s, they went after the biggest names they could to relaunch these books. Whereas when they did New 52, they did that a little bit with Jim Lee and Jeff Johns, but they were more concerned with having 52 titles as opposed to, you know, whatever, 20 really good ones.
Right,
and
right. And
it's
an
interesting move.
Yeah.
In a bad way, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's funny. They never really fully realized any of their goals or dreams or anything. I mean, they're losing percentage points by the month, and unless they light their hair on fire and jump around, I don't know if there's any way they could catch our attention if they don't get things in order real quick.
There's a big push next year for TV, and we'll see if that does anything, but it's not going to really carry over.
Movie, you know, Andrew, movie has not translated necessarily into comic sales either.
I exactly.
Mean, we like, you know, some of the newer Spider-Man films, if it's something new or it would get somebody's attention, it works. But if it's just another superhero film, it really doesn't bring any more people in there. I think the average Joe public already realizes now that superhero films are part of their genre and their generation now, pretty much.
Exactly, and that it's... The Transformers movies probably did not lead to significant sales of the old Transformers TV show box sets. And I mean, the same thing is going to be true now that you're saturated with comic book movies and Marvel Films has established itself as a brand. You're not going to see, because I remember for Iron Man, there were reports that there was crossover for the first time. And it was only for the first like weekend because it came out on Free Comic Book Day weekend that retailers were saying people were buying some Iron Man trades just out of curiosity. But you're not, I highly doubt you're going to see people trying to track down Guardians of the Galaxy trades this summer.
Well, you know, there has been some curiosity and interest there in it. Yeah, but Marvel doesn't have much out there, unfortunately, in the way of currently in print trade paperbacks. You have to either go online or try to hunt the dang things down. That's about where it's at. But I have lots of old reprints I can come in and buy.
actually, where I was going is Gotham, the young James Gordon TV show that I guess the latest thing said that all of the comic book pilots are sort of assumed to get picked up regardless at this point, just because everybody wants one in a way.
Yeah, I could see that. I could easily see that. If you give me something that looks like a hot comic book, we'll find a slot for it, yeah.
But are we really going to see anybody tracking down old Gotham Centrals? I don't think so.
No, we're in different related fields, and it becomes more evident at this point because we're not a novelty. We're the source material, and if you want to look that up, you're welcome to. But that's true of any movie. I mean, just because you watch an old 50s noir doesn't mean you want to go and read Mickey Spillane novels.
Right. And I think that was always the hope, that was what was going to save comics publishing because of those anecdotes about the, what is it, in the 70s, Superman the movie saved DC Comics. And then, what was it? Stan Lee always credited the Spider-Man TV show that everybody talks shit about with saving Marvel in 78. And they've gotten so big with, you know, establishing themselves as sort of retailers of licensed characters that it doesn't matter anymore. And it's interesting, and it's kind of, I mean, the cool thing would be is what if things continue the way they are at DC, what if somebody who actually cared about it came in and said, okay, you can't do, you know, this many comics, you can do 20.
Right, you know, right.
Here's your budget, do 20.
Game plan. You know, we all kind of hope for that savior, I tell you, because it just takes a person with vision and talent to turn things around, and it doesn't seem like that hard. It seems like a simple formula, doesn't it?
Okay, one other piece of news to bring up, speaking of comic saviors, and let's not get into a long argument about it. Grant Morrison's Multiversities finally coming out. Did you see that?
I heard about it, and
now with Frank quietly, he's gone. But yeah, Grant Morrison's Multiversities coming out later this year.
Oh wow! You said there was a different artist associated with that.
Different artist. Some of the preview pages already reveal the Watchmen planet, so Grant can shit on Alan Moore a little bit, and you know, somebody can ask Alan Moore what he thinks of Grant Morrison tackling the Watchmen characters, and Alan Moore can say something like, I wouldn't read a Grant Morrison comic if you paid me. Like, what?
why would I read fucking comic books? I'm a magician, for Christ's sake.
Right. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting because It's the kind of thing you used to get excited about, and then you learned your lesson from DC. You know, like
I don't know. I'm really approaching DC. You and I didn't know whether Grant Morrison's involvement with this project was still ongoing. We know that he wrote it, right? But we don't know if he still has involvement at DC with this project. So that's going to be a big deal.
That's an interesting thought. Yeah, what if it's just them churning out the
script? We bought this fucking script. We can publish it with any artist we want. Here, Hugo, come out of the closet. We got a job here for you.
It's somebody better than that. But yeah. Well,
we'll see.
one thing, not to crap on DC, which I think we've been doing for about 25 minutes.
I'm sorry, DC. We crap on thee far too many.
I do want to say one nice thing is that even though I don't necessarily think the quality of the books is there overall, Vertigo did seem to get a little bit of a push.
I think I go out on a limb and say 90% of DC books are crap. All right, we'll call it about 10%. Okay.
Well, yeah, but I mean, look at the Vertigo push with, they got a 100 Bullets miniseries going. That was all right. Like,
yeah.
Didn't work out that great in the end, but there were some really good issues in there, and, you know.
Well, they didn't sell. That was ultimately what DC's going to look at. I think it finished up at what, was it 8,000 copies per issue or so? Something like that. I can't remember. But it wasn't a hugely impressive figure. They could turn it into a trade. They haven't announced a trade or even a collection yet that I know of, which they usually do before something is finished. Right. Nowadays. So, I don't know. Do they know what... These might have been the last sputters of projects that they had lying around when they took over. I'm not convinced by their new line. They kind of know what's going on either.
No, I don't think they know what's going on. I think that they threw a little bit of money toward Vertigo as an imprint.
Right, to see if it would stick, but it hasn't, you know, really come up with anything groundbreaking yet. I mean, but you have to have vision to have a leadership role in something called Vertigo, unless it's just kind of a name at this point.
True.
Well, there you go. We didn't really get on a dark note, but there's a whole lot of shit going on in comics, you know. And I lay awake nights sleepless thinking about what could happen in the world of comics, but I just thought I'd share with you with Andrew tonight.
But next week you won't be doing that. You'll be having fun.
This is true. This is true, man. I'm looking forward to the exercise, meeting the people. I want to meet the people. That's it. I want to do this grassroots shit where we just get out there and say, dude, I know you from my store. What you up to today? I'm just burying my head in the sand. That's how it works, you know?
And let's see. If you don't know Vernon from the store and you want to track us down and see what we're up to at the con, I'm on Twitter under my other blog, The Stop Button. So, I mean, you know, shoot us a message. We'll be on the floor Friday and Saturday, like I said. The Facebook. Now, the Facebook is probably going to be the easiest way to hear the episodes as they go up, because there's no control over how Apple refreshes its iTunes stream. But the Facebook pages, we're going to be sharing those little episodes on there, and if we do any little movie clips, they'll be up there too. At facebook.com/thecomicsgallery, comics with an X.
Right, so that hot cosplayers, come on over and we'll do some video.
Uh-huh. And what else?
I got nothing, man. We were supposed to make it short. I think we blew our 30 minutes.
We blew our 30 a bit. Well, you wanted to start talking about things.
Yeah, the 800-pound gorilla, sorry.
All right. All right.
Thanks for putting this up with us, kids. We'll see you at the con.